listening to a podcast of Living Faith located at 51 North Market Street, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, a community of faith, love, and hope.
Dictionary.com says wonder is to be filled with admiration, amazement, or awe, also just to marvel. And just for me personally, that looks more like just like having to stop and like be still because I see something and it's just like so beautiful that I just have to recognize it as that. So in my faith, that means like all the things I see in the world and people and then the things I learn about God that I just have to like stop because it's so beautiful. So I think I was actually, like Dwayne was saying, I don't know if I was a wise young boy, but I definitely was a good wanderer back then, maybe better than I am now. I think kids in general are really good at this, and we could learn a lot from them. But as a young boy, I was loved to be outside, loved just to like run around. We lived on a farm, so I was just like so excited that I could get my butterfly net out and go back and forth between two butterfly bushes at our house, try to catch like butterflies, the bees. I'd get these like white-headed bumblebees, which can't sting. That's a handy tip for y'all. And I would grab like as many as I could in a net and then like pull my hand in and like pull them out and then like go show my mom, like, Mom, look at this. And she probably like got freaked out a little bit at first, but like she's told me that's like something she looks back on is like, yeah, she learned a lot from me in that moment just about like being so excited about like the little details. I'd love to see all the little legs on some bug and like how they're moving. Yeah, it was just so exciting for me, and I don't know why, but that was like wonder, I think, in a really pure form. And I think that was like a spiritual thing that we can like carry on in our faith. And then another story just of me being a boy was as like a 5 or 6 year old. This is probably like one of the first times I felt like a connection with God, and that was walking our dog Zabumafu. I don't know if you know what that's from. No, it was a kids' show, and Zabumafu was the lemur, so we called our dog that. I'm walking him around the farm, and I don't know if you guys like know this sound, but like the red-tailed hawk, like that high pitch, like ca-ca, but a lot higher pitch. like even as a young boy, I couldn't quite get there. I was trying to make that sound. I couldn't quite get it out of my throat. And then all of a sudden, like, that sound just, like, comes out of the sky. And I was like, wow, God, like, that's so cool that you would send that bird just to, like, help me out with not being able to get that sound out. And that was the first time I thought, yeah, God, like, wants to interact with me. And like, that's really cool. So I think just like having a wonder about ourselves, understanding that we aren't going to understand it all, but it's so exciting when we do get to see these little pieces and these glimpses of God's person and just beauty is so awesome. So I have one more story. It's actually a verse, John 3, and it's the story of Jesus teaching Nicodemus. So Nicodemus was a teacher, a member of the Jewish ruling council, and Jesus is telling him, I tell you the truth, you have to be born again. And Nicodemus is like, wait, I don't get that, that doesn't make sense. And he's like, no, you have to be born again. And then he says in verse 8 that the wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit. And so I was reading that a couple months ago. I think it was like about a year ago. And it was at a point in my life where I wasn't feeling like super close to God. I was like, kind of just wondering, like, how do I get back in connection with you, God? And I read this verse one morning, just and like that really touched me, just that like the wind's blowing as it pleases. And I don't get to know, like, how that works, but I do get to experience it when, like, God's Spirit, like, does blow and touch my life, which was really comforting in that moment. And then that same day, I ended up, so I was an RA last year, and I had all my residents write letters to themselves at the beginning of the year, just so they could like hear, like see how much they'd grown, hopefully, like throughout the year. And so I had handed all the letters back that day. I had written myself one too. And when I opened it and read it, I was like, wow, that's good, that's good. Like, you were on the right track. And then at the end, I had written what I had learned that morning in Devos. And it was the same verse, like same lesson pretty much, like word for word, what I had just learned. So I had like forgotten it completely, but then God's like, no, like, this is good stuff. So yeah, I think that fills me with wonder whenever I think of that story too. The way God just, like, we don't know how he works all the time, but we do get to see these like, little times when he meets us, which is exciting. So as far as, like, theology, I'm still, like, working through a lot, but I would probably say I'm more of, like, a mystic than a fundamentalist, which for me that means, like, I'm very comfortable admitting that I don't understand, like, a lot of the Bible and a lot of just, like, faith. But I still, like, love it when I can, like, learn these little things. And I loved, Travis, when you were talking about the last song there. Like, it did help me remember that, like, even though there's so much we don't know, like, we can hold on to, like, Christ as our cornerstone. And, like, there's, like, foundational truths. Like, they don't move. So, yeah, on, like, my best days, I'm super excited just to, like, see what's going to happen. Like, I don't know. What are you going to do today, God? I don't know. But I do get, like, to, like, experience that. On the flip side, on some of my, like, worst days or, like, other days, that not knowing can turn into more of a fear, especially when I'm, like, counting on myself to, like, make things happen, because I don't know what's going on, and that's scary. So, yeah, just in general, I like have to balance that fear with wonder. That is especially relevant right now as I'm in senior year of college. I'm like looking like towards the future, and there's a lot of possibilities, and that can be exciting, but also it can be like scary. Like, what am I supposed to do? I don't want to make the wrong decision, and so like I have to get back to that wonder that like reminds me. God has awesome things, and I'm not going to figure it all out today. That's okay. So that, like, is definitely relevant to my jobs. It's also relevant just to, like, relationships. Like, I'm trying to figure things out all the time. Like, what am I feeling? I don't know. But I think, like, it's a process, and I get to just, like, live in the excitement of, like, one day at a time. Yeah, so I guess just wrapping up, I wanted to say, like, thank you, all of you guys, for being part of, like, that, like, experience with wonder. Like, I love just, like, to come in and like, talk with all you guys and hear this, like I don't know, just exciting stories of what's going on in your lives, because that's, like, how I, like, experience wonder now. It's, like, through music, it's through art, but then it's, like, definitely through people and their stories. And so I'm so thankful to, like, get to come here on Sunday mornings and, like, meet with you guys and talk.
With this qualifier, I'm not up here today for you. I'm here because I feel like I have something that I need to hear, that God needs me to hear right now. And so if you get anything out of it today, then that's like a bonus. as we walk through life as children of God, along that journey, God is constantly teaching us and drawing us closer to him in a trusting relationship. And if you're anything like me, he's dealing with that same issues over and over again. It's taught me that maybe I'm kind of a slow learner. So I've come to a point in my life where God needs to address an issue that he's been addressing through my whole spiritual journey. And I think he wanted me to look back over that journey and remember all the places that he met me along the way so that I could be reminded about that. So that's what I'm here to do today. So what I'm going to do is kind of walk you through my spiritual journey, which is about 15 years, but I'm only going to just focus on one aspect of my character and my relationship with God and how he has walked beside me in that particular area. And that area is finances. So if anyone has ever seen the show Monk, it's about a detective who has this uncanny ability to just notice minuscule details and put them together to solve mysteries. And if you were to ask Monk about his ability, he would tell you it's a gift and a curse. That's how I feel about finances. I think I do have kind of a gift when it comes to finances, not in making money or making money grow or, you know, those kind of things, hedge funds, and I don't even know what IRAs. But my gift is taking what I'm given and being able to budget that and live on it and make it work. And that's a gift because throughout my life I've learned to live on various incomes, not really big, but rather big and very small, and sometimes my incomes will come steady, sometimes not so steady, but I learned how to do that. And that's a gift. Where it becomes, I don't know that I believe in curses, but where it becomes a problem is because it's a gift of mine, I tend to focus too much on money, and it can cause me anxiety, and that is one of the big areas that I'm constantly pulling back from God, surrendering to him and pulling back, because I feel out of control when I'm not managing that myself. So that's kind of a big deal. I was lucky enough to marry someone who kind of grew up in the same financial way that I did, where we didn't have tons of money growing up. We had enough to live on, sometimes extra, more than, you know, than what was needed for base needs. I think for both of us, that had a lot to do with our mothers who knew how to stretch a dollar. I'm very thankful for my mother-in-law because she taught my husband how to live with me. but even so, we have a different, we still have different ways of thinking about money. And just to give you an example, and this is all just to give you guys kind of an insight into my character and the way I think about money and finances and budgeting. To give an example, sometimes Justin will be working on a project at home, and he finds that he's lacking a tool, and he'll let me know. I had to go to Lowe's and get a pickaxe. But don't worry, it wasn't expensive. That's always the qualifier. The problem there with that statement is that we have a different idea of what the word expensive means. Not just how much money is expensive, but the base idea of what the word expensive means. Justin's meaning for the word is in line with, say, other English-speaking people across the world, along with Merriam-Webster and dictionary.com, that expensive means excessive costs. But to me, expensive, I break up that word, and there's the word expense, which means cost, and the suffix IVE, which means pertaining to or relating to. So expensive means it's pertaining to a cost. It's related. If it costs anything, if you have to part with money for it, it's expensive in my mind. Which is fine. I'm not a person that never wants to part with money, but once that parting happens, there's a part of me that's kind of anxious and disheveled until I've gotten to look at my budget and see where that money is coming from, and okay, we're all right. It's okay, that $30 that you spent on a pickaxe, we happen to have that money right there in home maintenance. I'm gonna take that out and we're good. Just don't buy anything for home maintenance until the next paycheck. So understanding that about me, I'm going to go ahead and kind of go through my spiritual journey with you just based on how God has met me in the area of finances along that journey. I was raised in a home where the Bible was the basis of truth, and so I accepted that truth at a very early age. But It wasn't until my mid-20s that I actually decided, you came to that crossroads where I needed to decide to surrender my life to God and follow His lead. It was a very dark time in my life. Didn't seem that way on the outside. At that point, I had been living on my own just for about a year and a half. I stayed with my parents long enough to pay off my school debt, which didn't take as long 15 years ago as it does today. I was working as an elementary school teacher, making a very decent salary. Like for a single person living on their own, I was making probably around $35,000 15 years ago, which for a starting salary was very decent. And that's where I learned to budget. I learned to budget on a very nice, I wasn't rich, but a good salary. So on the outside, my life was good. I had enough money to live on. I was putting money away, saving money, but I was miserable. I was in a very dark place. And at about the same time that you came to this place where I decided it's time to just lay my life over to God, and He gave me a release from teaching because I wasn't happy with my chosen profession, and I knew I needed to just leave that behind. So that was my first faith step very soon after my surrender, my faith step with God, and it had a lot to do with finances. I left this $35,000 a year job to work at Sight and Sound, where I met Justin, for $9 an hour. So that it was pretty huge. And that's the point where, and He met me, God met me, and I learned to budget on a much smaller salary. I wasn't saving as much, but my needs were met. And during about 2.5 years that I was at Sight and Sound, and the salary went up a little bit, they had cost of living increases, but never a lot, God really worked on me those 2.5 years in a lot of spiritual ways. That's when I found this family here that I joined and kind of took a initiative in my own spiritual growth rather than relying on my parents. I was baptized at a little creek by Lancaster Mennonite High School. I had been baptized as a baby, but I decided, now that I've taken this step and I'm a believer, I want to be baptized as a believer. I went on my first mission trip to Belarus with this church. And then in 2004, I started getting a very similar feeling to the feeling I felt when I left teaching. It was kind of a discontentment with my job mixed in with an anticipation to what God, because I knew this wasn't where I was staying. So the end of the year 2004, I decided, okay, I'm leaving. I don't know what God has in store, but I turned in my letter and I left Sight and Sound. And teaching degree really helps with situations like this where you just leave a job not knowing what you're going to do, because I can always fall on substituting. So I left the job, started substituting, and somewhere around February of the next year, it was decided what I was going to do next. I'm not going to go into how that happened because I'm focusing on finances here. But what happened was I signed on with Wycliffe Bible Translators to be a missionary as a teacher in an international school in Guatemala. So this was my next huge leap as far as trusting God with finances, because I wasn't getting paid a lot at Sight and Sound, but it was a steady paycheck. I knew exactly what the paycheck was going to look like each week, so I could budget on that. This was something completely new. Now I was trusting God because I was living on support from individuals and churches who would give money each month. Some people, I didn't have a lot of like regular supporters that said, oh, we'll give you $50 a month. There were some really just solid people that every month gave, but it was like $10 a month, and that was great. So, but then other people was like, oh, that's right, Jan is in Guatemala, I'm gonna write a check, and they write a check just for that month. So it was not steady in any way, shape, or form. I figured out when I got there, I needed about $800 a month to live. And one month, the check that I got from Wycliffe was as low as $150 that I got that month. But another month, it was $2,000. So I learned to budget on this very sporadic income, and I never lacked for anything in the 4 years that I was there. It was always taken care of. So when I went back, I went there four times. I always came back over the summer for a few weeks, but went back for 4 years. The fourth year, 2008, won't go into what went into this, but I felt it's time. There wasn't any discontentment really with this job. I had to rely on other things. I loved this job, but I knew it was time. I knew going in 2008, this is my last teaching year, the year of teaching here. And in 2009, I moved back to the States, lived with my brother for about a month. And in August of 2009, I found an apartment in the city, and a landlord amazingly took a chance on a single woman who did not have a source of income. I used the money I had gotten from selling my car in Guatemala to pay the security deposit and first month's rent. And I let him know I'm applying to teaching jobs and I'm getting things together to start substituting. But at this moment, I don't have anything to show you that I have employment. But he was a Mennonite man, and he appreciated that I was a missionary and trusted me. So he gave me this apartment. And I was just waiting I needed some background checks to come from Harrisburg, two letters from Harrisburg, so that I could take them to the substitute service so I could get started and have some kind of employment. Well, in between the time that I got this apartment and was able to start substituting, I was at Walmart and getting things for my new apartment. And in the middle of the cleaning aisle, I had a breakdown, literally crying, sobbing, looking in my shopping cart with all these cleaning supplies and thinking, what am I doing spending money when I have no income? Like, I have this much money. I don't remember how much it was in the bank, but I don't know when I'm going to get more money again. How am I spending money? I pulled myself together, and I did end up buying those things because I may be poor, but I needed a clean toilet. So I walk out to the car, get in the car, and I remembered that in my wallet I had a gift card for Wise that I'd found when I was moving into the apartment. And I didn't know how much money was left on it. It was left over. So I decided I was going to stop at Wise. It was on the way home, just to find out how much money was on this card, because I thought, this will be my hope. This is money. It'll give me hope to keep going. So I go into Wise, go to the customer service desk, hand them the card. They scan it. There was a whopping 73 cents on that card. So I walked out of Wise with 73 cents worth of hope in my hand. And I walked out to my car, sat behind the wheel, cried, started praying, and I said, okay, God, I think I can stretch this out 1 cent an hour. So that means I have 73 hours of hope, and I prayed that God would send me, within that 73 hours, send me some more hope to keep me going. I was asking for hope. So I, again, pulled myself together, drove home. When I ask God for something, I always, in my infinite wisdom, know how he's going to answer. I know exactly how he's going to answer. And he was going to answer by two pieces of mail in my mailbox from Harrisburg so that I could take them to the substitute service and become employed. I know God like the back of my hand. So I walked home, opened that mailbox. There is nothing in it. That's fine. He's got 73 hours. That was Monday. I prayed that prayer Monday, probably around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I had till Thursday at 3. Tuesday, checked my mailbox, no mail. It's not even just there wasn't anything from Harrisburg, nothing. It was completely empty, no junk mail, nothing. Wednesday, checked my mailbox, nothing in it. Thursday, I don't know where I was, but I was out all day, and I didn't get home till about 5. It was 2 hours past the deadline, which God had missed. Imagine that. But I still wanted those things from Harrisburg because I needed them. So I anxiously go to my mailbox, open it up. There is one piece of mail in the mailbox, and it is not from Harrisburg. It is from my cousin Eric and his wife Ellen, who I probably hadn't seen or talked to since before I left for Guatemala. It seemed like it was a card, and I thought, well, this is nice. It's probably a housewarming card just in time before I lose my apartment because I have no money. And I open the card, and out falls a check for $400. And a note from Eric and Ellen saying that they had been blessed when they were struggling financially with an anonymous gift, and they were paying it forward. And then I looked at the date on the check, and it was written on Monday, the day that I prayed to God for hope. He didn't even wait 24 hours, let alone 73 hours. She may have written that check before I even prayed that prayer. So there is God taking care of me again. And I did get those, eventually got those things from Harrisburg and started subbing. And for about a year and a half, I worked as a substitute, mostly in Lancaster City. Did a couple long-term sub jobs. At one point, I applied for and was interviewed for a permanent position, which I did not get. And I was devastated at the time because I thought this was, you know, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's not happening. And all of a sudden, even after all these times, God walked alongside me, took care of me, gave me everything I need, I started becoming stressed. Because subbing is not the security is not that great because you don't know week to week how many days you're going to get subbing. There's summers. So I was a little stressed. And during this time, flip through here just in case I get lost. During this time, one evening, I decided to bake some brownies. And when the brownies were finished, I got them out. When they were just sufficiently cold, I cut into them and realized I have no milk. It was probably a little before 8, and I wasn't going to drive out and get milk. So the next best thing to me, if you have brownies and no milk, is coffee. I did not have decaf, but I needed something to drink with my brownies, so I made coffee. And I'm very much affected by caffeine. I also, when I'm in this stressful state, tend to have insomnia a lot. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I think it was a Friday night, so you know, if it's not that big a deal if I can't get to sleep. So I had my brownie, my cup of coffee, and amazingly, I fell right to sleep shortly after 8 o'clock. I think I was watching TV or something, and I just fell asleep. And I woke up about 3 hours later, did not sleep the rest of the night. So from 11 o'clock on, I was up all night. When I have insomnia, what I tend to do is go back and forth between going to my bed and trying to sleep and getting up and doing something productive like rearranging the furniture in the living room. So I was doing that, going back and forth. And one of these points where I was in my bed trying to sleep, I entered into an emotional, one-sided rant with God. And I was just crying out to him about all the things that were laying on my heart. I had no financial security with subbing, no job security. I had no health benefits at all. It was a year and a half of no health benefits. What if I got hurt? What if I got sick? What was going to happen to me? I was living by myself in the city. I was kind of lonely and sometimes a little bit scared. Probably not as scared as I should have been living where I was in the city, but I was sometimes a little bit scared living there. And above all, I was crying out to him. I'm like, I don't even feel like you hear me. I feel like everything I'm saying is just bouncing off the walls. You're not answering me. There's always a lot of crying in these situations where I'm talking with God. There's a lot of that. And eventually I calmed down and I gave up on sleep. And at one point, probably like 2 or 3 in the morning, I was sitting at my kitchen table having a snack. I don't think it was another brownie at that point. I think it was a little less sugar in this snack. And for some reason, as I'm sitting there having my snack, I started thinking about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I don't know where it came from, but I started thinking about how they said to King Nebuchadnezzar, they were talking about not being afraid to go into the fiery furnace. They said, our God will save us. But then almost in the same breath, they said, but even if he doesn't. So I was thinking about that. Like, it's such great faith to say, our God will save us. But is it still faith if you say, but even if he doesn't? Because if you have faith he's going to save us, then how do you say, but even if he doesn't? I'd like to tell you what I came up with as far as what that meant, because I think I came up with something really good. But I don't remember that, because what happened next just impacted me so much. I decided I'm going to get out my Bible and read this in context. So I got out my Bible to Daniel and read the story. And in the margin, was a cross-reference to Psalm 91. And I'm like, well, I've got all the time in the world here. Let's flip to Psalm 91 and read it. And what I read there absolutely blew my mind. So I'm going to read that to you. Psalm 91. Those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. This I declare about the Lord. He alone is my refuge, my place of safety. He is my God, and I trust him. For he will rescue you from every trap and protect you from deadly disease. He will cover you with his feathers. He will shelter you with his wings. His faithful promises are your armor and protection. Do not be afraid of the terrors of the night, nor the arrow that flies in the day. Do not dread the disease that stalks in darkness, nor the disaster that strikes at midday. Though 1,000 fall at your side, though 10,000 are dying around you, these evils will not touch you. Just open your eyes and see how the wicked are punished. If you make the Lord your refuge, if you make the Most High your shelter, no evil will conquer you. No plague will come near your home. For he will order his angels to protect you wherever you go. They will hold you up with their hands so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone. You will trample upon lions and cobras. You will crush fierce lions and serpents under your feet. The Lord says, I will rescue those who love me. I will protect those who trust in my name. When they call on me, I will answer. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue and honor them. I will reward them with a long life and give them my salvation. I honestly don't know what it has to do with that story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the psalm that had been written thousands of years ago answered every single thing I cried out to God about just hours before. And this psalm is my favorite passage in the Bible because I honestly feel like it's written for me. It's God's words specifically to me. And it talks about everything that I'm living through and God is trying to teach me through my journey that he can be trusted about everything. There's nothing that I can't put my trust in him for. And I need to stop grabbing things back from him. So once again, I'm in a place where I'm moving on. On Friday was my last day working full-time at my job. I left my job, going back to substituting, and moving toward, Justin and I, sometime in the near future, we'll be training to become foster parents, hoping sometime in the new year. But in that financial sense, I've been struggling a lot. What if we don't have a renter since, we have an apartment in our home that we rent out for a little extra income. We haven't had a renter there for a few months. What if substituting isn't enough extra income? What if we don't have enough money to prepare ourselves for the things we need for foster parenting? It's just all these things keep going through my head, and I think that's why God said that I needed to speak today, because he wanted me to look back and see how he has met me every single other time in my life where this has come about. Most recently, he spoke to me in a little bit more quiet way than the two stories that I had shared before. On Thursday morning, the day before my last day, I was going over the budget, which always stresses me out a little. Justin's learning when I'm doing the budget, it's best not to talk to me if at all possible. For some reason, I stood up and I turned around and I looked at my dining room wall. I wasn't thinking about why I was doing it, but like 9 months or a year ago, I decided that what I wanted on the dining room wall was this picture that growing up was in our kitchen of a man at the table with his head bowed and hands folded with a loaf of bread and a Bible in front of him. And I had decided to put a decal underneath that picture. And so I stood up, turned around and looked at that picture and saw the words written underneath, which said, give us this day our daily bread. And God saying, trust me, I'm going to give you each day your daily bread.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information about Living Faith, check us online at livingfaithlancaster.com.